You're in with the Ghost of Radio. Welcome back to this, our shared podcast in our shared origin season. The moment you stepped into this space, it became October, the time when the cauldron was first filled with episodes of mid-century horror radio for you to experience, learn from, and enjoy. And so we celebrate this time of year by developing, ghosting, curating a very special cauldronette, which is filled with a select few of the best episodes around from all time, all gathered time and space. And when I reach my ghosting into that cauldron at this time of year, I don't choose an episode. One is thrust into my hands, and it inevitably leads us one step closer to the pinnacle story of horror that is awaiting us at the end of the month. So that's how we celebrate birthdays around here. What is it this week? This week, our episode is called Northern Lights, and it is from Quiet Please. Northern Lights from Quiet Please. Go to the internet, type in relicradio.com, they have everything, archive.org, the internet archive, or open your non-tracking search engine and type in Quiet Please Radio. Single episodes, or Quiet Please Radio Northern Lights, or I always forget, I mentioned them last, the fan site that is just quietplease.org. All of these places will deliver this episode to you. None of those places can deliver you from it. Only I will be here to help you when you come back. Off you go. See you soon. All right. We're back for a little while. For a little while, we have left to be back before it gets too cold. That was Northern Lights from Quiet Please. And what did you make of it? What a tremendous episode it is, with its many desperate callbacks to Other Side of the Stars. One of the beauties of this short series, 2 years, it's all it gave us, is the web it wove of a constant theme of endangerment, of the world being on the edge of the abyss in many different ways. That ran through so many Quiet Please episodes in such a real way at the birth of the atomic age, if you want to give it an innocent name, which is when Quiet Please was broadcasting. And we have covered many of the ways that human beings have plotted to destroy this world, from individuals to collectives. And here we have the variation on that theme of humans inadvertently making it possible for alien life to come here and just end it for us. So that was what happened here, much like Other Side of the Stars. Let's dive immediately into it with the inimitable intro to Quiet Please.
Quiet Please. Quiet Please. American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for today is called Northern Lights.
All right, we launch right into the narrative done by the perfect Ernest Chappell, and you will have to forgive me if I stop us twice for two of the most beautiful memes of Quiet Please. You recognized them when you heard them. Here's the first.
This is a story about the temporal displacement of mass.
You could listen to Ernest Chappell tell you about anything. But when it's the Cauldronette, you know that this is a danger sign, a classic quiet please danger sign. Let me talk to you about some boring technical thing, like how a plumbing shop smells, or how we drill for cores in the ocean. Let me just tell you, bore you with this technical stuff that I do for my job. Oh, it's not going to remain a boring technical story. This we know. And if that weren't enough of a warning, then he goes and says something like this to us.
It is also a story about teleportation. Do you know what those terms mean? No, I didn't think you did, but you stay right where you are, my charming friend, and you're quite likely to find out. You just stay right there and listen, and I'll tell you everything you want to know.
Oh, we do not accept that invitation from Quiet Please Narrator, do we? Have a seat. Sit there. Sit right there. Sit there. Stay where you are and listen to me. I have to tell you something. We know that what we are going to hear, what they are going to tell, is always an end-of-the-world story, whether that is the whole world or just our little part of it. So we are well set up for a story of deep horror here. And we're even going into a laboratory, aren't we? And the sidekick here reminds us of Porky from Thing on the Forble Board. Oh, we are so set up.
Ever see the Northern Lights? Aurora Borealis is their right name. You don't see them very often below the 50th parallel of latitude in this country, but up in northern Minnesota and Canada, upper New York, places like that, they're quite common of a winter night. If you've seen them, you know what they look like. If you haven't, there's no use my trying to describe them. Sometimes they fill a whole northern sky with waves of color, like a fire burning way beyond the horizon. Sometimes they're just long streamers of fire filling up the whole sky. And another time they look like gigantic fringed curtains of pure light, swaying as if some cold cosmic breeze plucked at them, way far off there to the north. And you can hear them, too, sometimes. Well, maybe not exactly hear them, but there's a sound, a humming, that crackling somewhere inside your head. And there are times when you'd swear it's a voice talking to you, talking in some kind of strange language you can almost understand, filling your whole being with a kind of desperate, inescapable terror. You know what I mean? At night, in the cold night, voices talking and saying things to you that you can almost understand, filling the night sky with signs and portents of inescapable terror. And nobody in the whole world knows what they are, nobody in this world at least, except me. And after I get done talking to you, you'll know too. And you won't be happy.
Do not reference me still sitting there listening. Oh, I'm doomed now. It's a mixture, a beautiful mix in this case of technical talk. What are the Northern Lights? What do they look like? Where are they located? And then something that you as the innocent listener don't know to identify as real scientific fact or a madman's fiction, or maybe some mixture of both, that you can hear a crazy sound behind the lights. That would have been enough of a threat. We could have just been left wondering why you hear a sound. But oh, we're not going to be left there. No, we have to be told something while we sit there that is going to end our world. Now let's go directly into that laboratory and see where this mishap, where this wrong turning, where this opening of a door that there's nothing behind began.
Let me show you something now. This is from a recording I made on, December 13th, 1948, a little more than a month and a half ago.
I started the recorder while Norman and I were just about finished with our work that afternoon here in the laboratory. I just set the microphone on top of the file cabinet there and turned on the machine. Listen, I'm going to play it back for you. The quality isn't so very good, but you can recognize my voice and Norman's, I think. Here.
I got the coil rewound now, I guess.
Did you test it?
How can I test it when I say I just got it rewound?
Well, hurry up. It's almost 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, it's dark, but I didn't realize the time.
Hurry up.
I'm hurrying. Be a display tonight, you suppose?
How do I know? Been a display the last 3 nights.
Well, that was a dinger last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, the machine wasn't ready.
Hey, listen, now, do you think you can do better than I can? Ouch!
What's the matter?
Oh, I stuck my finger.
Where'd you put the copper sulfate?
Up above the sink.
Huh? I got it. What are you doing?
Testing the coil.
How's it?
Oh, it looks okay. Hey, wait a minute. Yeah, it's okay.
I'll be right with you. Hook it up.
What are you going to send?
You try my cigarette lighter. That won't work anyway. I won't miss it if we don't get it back.
I don't know how the thing will work when the northern lights aren't shining.
Well, maybe they are shining. Turn off the room light. Let's see.
All right.
Pretty early, I hear.
What's the matter?
Hey, look.
Out early tonight. Oh, boy, that's fine. The whole sky. Look, blue and yellow. I never saw those long fringes.
Never the same.
Oh, say, did you turn on the recorder?
Yep.
Yeah, it's turning over. Let's see. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party.
Now, leave it alone. You about ready now?
Well, it's funny about the aurora.
Northern lights?
Listen to this part closely, friend.
Oh, I don't know.
Remember what I told you.
You can almost hear the darn things. Not hear them, I mean, but it's kind of like somebody talking to you in a language you can almost understand. I don't know. I mean, you ever notice it?
Sure. High frequencies, I guess. Something.
Awful lot we don't understand.
Oh, but that never stops us, does it? That's why humans are always having these terrible things we choose to believe are accidents. When there's something we don't understand, we feel that our job is to bust in and find out what's going on, to know the facts, and that somehow that means we will understand. That to know is to understand. That is always our undoing. All right, we continue with the very nicely done idea of the recording. Just to have that level of remove, abstraction from their voices, that slight recording sound is effective. It takes us back in time to those last precious moments before the sand ran out. At the end of this scene, when they say it's a caterpillar, what was your creep factor? It is the last thing you expect them to say. That the lighter came back with a caterpillar on it. It just makes it so creepy. I mean, he could have chosen something that was objectively scary. I don't know what. Blood? A vampire bat? No, he chooses a caterpillar. Something that can be very cute and that we think is harmless. Nothing about a caterpillar coming back through a time machine is harmless.
It'll be here, but it'll be 10 seconds.
Now, listen closely, please.
Yeah. Well, now,
what's going to happen?
Mr. Paul McGilligott, a famous mad scientist, is about to press the big old button and send his lighter into the future. You ready, Paul?
Here we go. Stand by. Look, Norm!
By golly, it is gone. It just disappeared. Bang, like that.
Hold your watch up close to the mic, Paul, so it'll record.
Yeah. There isn't a sign of the lighter. The little stage on which Paul placed it is empty, and it should appear again in just a second if it really did work. 3, 2, 1.
It's back! Hey, it's back, Norm!
It worked! We made it! Oh, man, let's see if it's all right. Oh, jeez! Oh.
Now what?
Oh, the lighter. Oh, it's cold, Paul. Ooh, here, take it, Paul, take it. Oh, it's freezing cold.
do you know that? Look, the darn thing's like a piece of ice.
Now, where the dickens do you suppose it's been in that 10 seconds?
No, wait, friend. That's not the payoff yet.
You said, only in the future.
Listen.
And time's caught up with it. It's back, but...
Hey, Paul, look. Where did that come from?
What?
There on the stage where the lighter was. Where'd that come from? In the middle of winter.
What is it?
It's a caterpillar, Paul. A brown and black caterpillar.
Well, where do you suppose it came from? It wasn't there.
I'll tell you where it came from, Paul.
What?
It came from the same place where the cigarette lighter went.
What are you talking about?
Well, feel it, Paul. Feel its fur. See? It's as cold as ice, too.
A caterpillar.
Yeah, that's all you have to say. Now, this episode premiered, was played first on January 30th, 1949. And so when he says, well, that was just 2 weeks before Christmas of 1948, the first-time listener thought, oh, that's last month. And you get that sense, that eerie sense of this is unfolding in my own real time. We've encountered this before, right, where things are written so that the end will come while you're listening to this episode on the air date or just when it finishes. Here, they do what Quiet Please did so well, which was to mix their horror with deep pathos in just this very short part of his narration, where he thinks back, like, what were you doing 2 weeks before Christmas? I was doing some Christmas shopping. It's so poignant. He has loved ones. He has a family. He had Christmas with them. And all of that is about to end. Every good, simple thing is about to end now. Here's that little part of audio.
Well, nothing special happened for a couple of days. That, you remember, was a month and a half ago, December 13th, 1948. Where were you on the night of December 18th? Saturday night, a week before Christmas. I'd been Christmas shopping in the afternoon, I remember. I came back to the laboratory to check up on some stuff, and Norman was there, fiddling with things.
All the normal things that you don't treasure until they're about to go away forever. It is crazy, though, and we sense it, that he's like, well, nothing special happened after that. I mean, what else do you need? When we start the next part of the story, it's kind of the same thing. Like, well, we fiddled around. We were just trying to do this and that. Like, that human refusal to acknowledge that you are out of your depth, that it is not normal, that you don't have it under control, which is so often our undoing and could be our collective undoing, is so strong throughout this. It's another warning bell.
Gosh, look out of that window.
The northern lights. Oh, they're really bright tonight.
They sure are.
Look how they pulse. Up, down. Up, down.
Norm.
Up, what?
Look at the deep freeze there in the dark.
What about?
You see it?
Light, Paul. Light.
I see it, Norm. It's right in step with the northern lights.
And the same color. Red, red, blue, blue, up, down, up.
Coming
down.
From the deep freeze where our little friend
down.
Isabella was singing to you. Now, what
hey,
do you...
Paul, listen.
I don't...
Listen.
We stayed there in the laboratory for a long time, listening to the voice of the thing in the box, endlessly repeating A-E-I-O-U, the vowel sounds of our speech, and watching the light that pulsed up from the deep freeze in perfect rhythm with the flickering of the northern lights we watched through the window. And we thought long, long thoughts that I don't remember any too clearly now. I do know we both of us thought of ways to perfect our little mechanism, our time machine. Our machine that brought back a little... cold brown and black caterpillar from somewhere. And when it was morning, and the lights had faded from the northern skies, we found that our machine was very different.
The audio I skipped out of this is when he shows up at the lab. The assistant, the friend, his name I'm too rattled to remember, says, "I heard the caterpillar singing. It was singing." And they do a bit of that horribly grating, "Oh, come on. Oh, come on." It's that refusal to admit that anything could be weird. As if the caterpillar alone weren't already weird. But in the scene that just unfolded, they both undeniably hear it. And this is again where our theme that the cauldron chose this October of being trapped, caught by someone else for their purposes is at play. It seems like the caterpillar has been caught by the two scientists, removed from wherever it is supposed to live. And somehow this has got something to do with the Northern Lights. Maybe the caterpillar lived on a place on Earth where it needed to see those Northern Lights. Maybe it touched that caterpillar. Maybe it could hear them, like our narrator tells us, that you can sometimes hear something in it. But now the caterpillar is trapped against its will and maybe dying, except that Paul and the two of them keep the caterpillar cold like she needs to be, and they're pretty nice to it. But she is still trapped. Oh, but that's not the story, is it? When they come to, basically in the morning, they find that she is dead, the caterpillar, but she has been like working through them, controlling their actions to make them build the machine so that it can bring back all of the other caterpillars. God alone knows how many. And we realize that she is not the one who was captured and trapped against her will. They are. We are. We are the ones who are now going to be trapped on our own planet by these caterpillars who need to use it for their own purposes. And just like the spider last week was going to be debilitated by heat, we are going to be debilitated by cold. And when we all finally die and get out of the way, the caterpillars will be just fine. So we are the ones who are now in a trap that is our own planet once it is turned on us. That's about as big as it gets, and we are certainly unwilling, but we can do as little about it as any butterfly in a net. So in this scene where Paul goes out to who knows where, still not sure where, not clear to them yet that this is deep space, that the caterpillar lives in deep space. Just that concept, we have to keep coming back to it. Way out in the depths of freezing space, these caterpillars live. This is a concept that leads you to reconsider what caterpillars who live right here on Earth that you see every day are. When he comes back from his trip to this freezing void, coated in caterpillars, it is right up there with any image of horror that has ever been conjured up for the radio or any other genre.
I put on a high-altitude aviator suit that had its own source of heat supply. Norman shook his head as I got back on the stage, nodded for him to press the switch. Never been cold, friend. Dark. You wouldn't know how dark it can get. Then I was standing on an immense plain that stretched so far into the distance, a plain of snow and eternal ice. A dead, cold, white world with the blackest sky above me. And the northern lights reached from horizon to horizon. Even through the high-altitude suit, I could feel a biting cold. And I was afraid, shivering, abjectly afraid. The streamers of the northern lights reached down toward me and wrapped about me. I heard a sound of voices screaming into my mind. I could understand them. I wished heartily I'd never played around with cosmic forces. I yelled inside the heavy helmet. I yelled, Norman! Norman, bring me back! And there was nobody to hear me. No, I don't know where I was. Another planet. Maybe the North Pole. Maybe the lights were all around me. Maybe that's where it was. But it was the most terrible, awful, cold, lonely place you could imagine in 100 years. The lights, the flickering, living lights crawled over me and beat at me. I could almost understand what they were saying. And then, a crash. A sudden blackness. I was standing again in the laboratory I'd left only a few short seconds ago, and Norman was tearing at the fastenings of my suit and beating at me with both hands. I wondered what in the world he was doing until I got the helmet off. He was brushing caterpillars off me. Thousands of cold, freezing cold, brown and black Isabella caterpillars.
Okay. As Arch Obler of Lights Out fame once said, it's the familiar that is the most horrible. When something familiar appears in a completely different way, it's the true definition of perversion. When something is changed to be the opposite of what it is, but it still looks the same. That's what's happening here. All right, we are forced to roll through to the ending, much as we don't want to. And if we come out of it with any one question that we can still voice as we begin to shiver, it's, where is Norman?
I'm listening. Listening to what? Don't you hear them?
I don't hear anything.
Don't you?
I don't hear anything.
Well, listen. Listen.
I don't hear anything.
Turn on the recording machine. I want to see if we could pick up their voices.
There isn't anything.
Turn it on. Turn it on. I want a recording. Quick. Quick, Norman. They're talking to us. Listen, friend. I want to play you another recording. This is what came out of our tape recorder that night when I was listening to the voices. And Norman couldn't hear anything. Just listen.
I still don't hear anything, Paul.
Be still, listen.
I tell you, I...
Listen.
What's that?
Look at the deep freeze.
The top's coming open. Look at the light around it, Paul.
Be quiet. Watch.
How did they... Good Lord, look. The caterpillars are coming out, Paul. Look at them. There's millions of them.
Be still, Norman.
But Paul, your voice.
Be still, I said.
What's the matter with your voice?
We want to talk to you.
You what? You said we.
Why, of course, Norman. We.
Who for the...
It is Paul's voice, Norman. Paul's voice. Voice. But it is not Paul speaking. Listen. We speak to you.
Paul!
Not Paul. We, the people of the lights. We from the cold. We are speaking to you with Paul's voice.
I tell you that...
Paul's voice will tell you what to do when the time comes, Norman. We go to the machine now. Paul's mind is ours for a little time now. We go to the machine. The machine that brought us to your world from the world of the lights.
Who are you? Who?
The people of the lights. To take over this world of yours. Only this world of yours is so hot. We must have the cold world. And we know how to make it cold.
What's the matter, Paul? Paul!
So hot.
No, no.
Quick, Norman. Turn on the machine. Send us to places in your world. No, our world. Hurry. So hot. Hurry, so hot.
Paul!
Hurry. Hurry. Turn on machine.
That's the end of the recording. No, I don't know. I don't have any recollection of it at all. But the recording's there, isn't it? That must be what happened. Anyway, when I woke up, Norman was gone, and there were no caterpillars in the place here. Then our machine that took people and things away into time and space, was wrecked. I don't know what became of it. You heard what they said about my voice. They're going to take over this world and make it a cold world, like the one they came from. Whatever that is, and wherever they went. No, I don't know where they went, where the machine sent them. I do have ideas. Yes. Are you cold? It's freezing in here. And just for example, you read the papers? Look at the newsreels? Did you see the pictures of the snow in Los Angeles? In subtropical Los Angeles, where it hasn't snowed for so many, many years. I wondered about it, too. I wonder if anybody saw any brown and black woolly bear caterpillars in Los Angeles. Larva of the tiger moth I see, Isabella.
Let's stop it there. The other classic Quiet Please ending of, do you see it? Look out your window. Do you see it? Do you see it happening now? Oh, that is another October thought that will circle back around to us. For now, let's stagger through our outro to Quiet Please.
The title of today's Quiet Please story is Northern Lights. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And my laboratory assistant, Norman, was played by Dan Sutter. The voices of Isabella and her friends was that of Cecil Roy. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now, for a word about next week, our writer-director, my good friend, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. For next week, I have a story for you that comes from the steel mills out South Chicago way. It's called Tap the Heat, Bogdan.
And so, until next week at this same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
The nervous laughter, the reiteration that Willis Cooper is his good friend. These are the hallmarks of a Quiet Please episode that was frightening enough that the people involved were coming down a little bit from it. You hear that particularly end of The Thing on the Forble Board, which we have covered in October's past. That is the end of Northern Lights from Quiet Please. Northern Lights out for everybody. Where are the caterpillars who came back on his suit? How are they doing this? How are they radically changing the temperature of our planet? How can they be so callous? You know, we talked about butterflies last time in Lights Out, innocent kinds of creatures. Caterpillars create butterflies. These are not innocent. Where are they? How are they doing this? The happenstance of it all. If these guys hadn't just happened to send the lighter while the northern lights were shining, this wouldn't have happened. It's the random, irresponsible nature of our own scientific questing, where we experiment first and ask questions later. And it's just that implacable machine horror that we have come to love, where there's no reason. If horror is activated, if that machine starts rolling, if you get the mechanism moving, It happens. And there's no reason why it comes to you except that you were there. We think that if we can understand, we can solve, we can prevent. But the only thing to understand here is that there's no reason behind it. And when it comes to you, there's no way to stop it. Oh, quiet, quiet, please. Another tremendous episode. And if Spider was about hating being trapped, and Them was about hating being trapped far from your home, here is being trapped in your home. Trapped in your home that is quickly made somebody else's home and not yours anymore. Hopefully that is not going to happen to any of you out there in Inglewood, Salisbury, Lake Forest, or Manchester. We have to have some safe space that we can stay in between visits to this cauldronette. Because I know that you will be back next week of your own free will to take the next step in this origin journey. So until that moment comes, be safe, be happy, and I'll see you soon.
I'm listening. Don't you hear them?